Hello, everyone. Hello, hello.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. And welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm your other host, Nina Barnett.
And today we are just chilling. I did such a good job. I'm like, Nina, we have to talk about this, this, this in the intro. And then we start recording. I'm like,
she's like, I'm the most chill girl in the world.
I'm like, I lived in California. I just like, don't give a fuck. But yeah, we're recording this the day before this episode comes out, which we recorded a long time ago. So heads up, guys. The audio isn't perfect, but I honestly think I salvaged it the best I could.
Caitlin did a really good job editing. Like, shout out to her. People don't understand the amount of effort that goes into that.
It is blood, sweat, and tears, y'all.
It really is.
It really is.
But yeah, we were experimenting with some microphones.
Yeah, but this was before we like had our proper setup. So yeah, there's that. But it's a great episode with Ginny Hogan. She actually has a book that we talk about a little bit in the beginning of the interview, but it's out now officially. I have it on my dresser right now, called I'm More Dateable Than a Plate of Refried Beans.
You guys, the book is fire flames, first of all. Yes. I also recommend not only buying it and giving it 5 stars, obviously.
Yeah, a review, seriously. And reviews, us, guys. Yeah. Spotify does reviews now, too. Like, please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. I cannot tell you how much this podcast has spread from word of mouth, and it makes me so happy. And yeah, guys, just do it.
Like, post it on your story. Do all the things.
Reply. Like, be active. Oh, so
we will respond.
We will respond. So I used to be really bad about checking DMs, but I'm getting a lot better. I'm here to tell you all that. but we actually were doing this right before interviewing a really exciting guest. And I was so excited because sometimes I'll like post about, you know, questions for a guest, and not everyone knows every guest, even if they're a big name, or they like won't know them by name, but then they'll like know who they are once they come on. Mm-hmm. I got so many questions for this guest. Like, it's so fun when you guys participate and there's like that back and forth.
Yeah, we want to be your friends.
Yeah, like be our friends, guys.
It's also hard because Instagram is like having a moment right
Yeah,
now.
Instagram. Oh my God, it was so funny. We were doing a brand meeting yesterday, and the girl we were talking to, who's Nina's friend, was like, Instagram's having an identity crisis. I was like,
that's a great way to put
that
it.
Is actually so correct.
Yep. Very correct. Honestly.
Yeah.
Also, happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride! My favorite time of year.
Honestly.
I love queer people. I actually, another thing. Oh my God. I'm like plugging our brand meeting. But another thing I said in the brand meeting, which I always make this joke, but it's not a joke because it's true, is that like everywhere I go, I just follow the gays.
Like, I mean, like, listen, that's a good way to do it.
West Hollywood. Yep. For years, like refused. I was 3.5 years in LA. I didn't move to Venice, Santa Monica. No, I was West Hollywood with my gays and my workout class. And now I'm in Chelsea with my gays and my workout class.
We love Chelsea.
Go Chelsea. Chelsea Pride. Yeah.
Chelsea Pride.
Also, my friend Russell was over last night and we were thinking about like, or talking about all of the history of Hotel Chelsea, mm-hmm. which is just like casually right there on 23rd.
Yeah, you can
pass
blink
by
and
all
miss
the
it.
Time.
Yeah.
You can too, because there's scaffolding, and something about New York that is so crazy that I always forget to do, even though I'm born and raised here, is look the fuck up.
Oh yeah.
Like if you don't look up, you miss so much shit.
You miss so much. I mean, I'm very guilty of sending emails and things during a walk and walking 15 minutes without seeing anything.
No, but it's not only that, it's like looking like up, like
literally up,
literally yeah. like at the architecture or the signs or like
yep.
not just right in, like ahead of you, you know. We're very like boom straight ahead or on our phones or whatever. So yeah. This is our recommendation of the day to look
this is our healthy tip
this
of the
is
day.
Our health moment. Nina, what do you want to tell me about your weekend?
You know, I'm just going to sum it up, you guys. Did I go back to the guy that scarred my face? Yes. Yes, I did. And I texted Caitlin and I was
literally,
like,
you're like, yeah, so, and I know this pretty much word for word because I was editing it last week. You're like, Yeah, so don't think that's going to happen again. Like, pretty done with that one. I got a text Saturday morning, like, guess who I went home with? I'm like, you've got to be kidding
me. I was like, and it was funny, the next morning he was like, you should talk about how that happened to your face on the podcast. And I was like,
been there, done that.
Already
sir.
Done that. And he was like, maybe I should listen. I was like, maybe you shouldn't. So if you're listening, I won't say your name. Welcome. Your t-shirt's coming back to you soon.
No, it's so good. It's a fashion statement. Guys, check out Nina's TikTok. She made a funny walk of shame TikTok.
Actually, it was really funny. I do, my number one tip for the walk of shame is just pick up something from like the farmer's market or just food or anything. And it makes it look like you are really put together and you're just out for an errand. I used to do it in college too. I would like mobile order something from the restaurant right next to my dorm.
Well, you also didn't have heels on.
Yeah, thank God.
So that was like, that's a huge game changer. I feel like the real walk of shame that you just like, most walk of shames aren't that shameful because like sex positivity and such.
Yeah.
But the one that like hurts was like that I remember from college is like, it doesn't matter who it is. It could be like day one, boyfriend, whatever. But you're walking around like the college town after Halloween. And unless you had a funny Halloween outfit, if it was slightly slutty and you the next morning are going home in your fucking cat ears, like you look like a dumb bitch.
Oh, yeah. The it's Halloween walk of shame is special.
My freshman year, I was so embarrassed because I was like a sexy devil. And I was like, I want to sexy kill myself.
No.
Sorry, trigger warning. Just kidding. Yeah, I didn't actually.
I do.
I shouldn't joke about that.
Yeah, there. And cheers. And there we
and
are.
And mental health.
Yeah, so that was really my weekend. And then I may have kissed one of my guy friends in the bathroom line at a bar.
Wait, what? Another guy?
Yep. We're just, as Ellen put
Nina,
it.
Nina, what the fuck? All your jokes are about being like celibate because you haven't kissed a guy in so long.
You guys, I'm telling you, if you say you're going to focus on the career, the universe is like, let's just throw everyone. It was, as Ellen put it, Ellen said, it was a glitch in the Matrix. I was like, it was a glitch in the Matrix. That's what I'm going with.
Oh my God. I'm excited to hear more, but we're going to kind of wrap it up. I'm going to tell you TLDR about my weekend.
What does TLDR mean?
Too long, don't read. I thought I was the old one.
TLDR? Who the hell
you
uses
don't know that?
TLDR?
Oh my,
I guess I've like seen it, but I thought it was just like Tilder. But I don't know what I thought that meant.
I'm dying.
Sorry, continue.
Tilder, Raya, what else are you saying out
here? Okay, I say Raya. Calm down. I'm cool. All right, go ahead.
God, I just started.
Tilder.
Yeah, Tilder. are we making Tilder a thing? Tilder, I went to the Hamptons. My friend Lily did like a rental situation. I think technically it's not a share house unless you're all like sleeping on the floor. I don't know. But we did that. I made friends with these new girls who are so fire and we all need to hang out. Went to Surf Lodge quite a bit. I felt like I was back in my high school days. No, but it was actually really youth. It was really fun. And we went to Crow's Nest on Friday night.
That's nice.
I hadn't been there before. Okay, oh my God, a few things. I'm like embarrassed to say this because we have like mutual friends, so I'm like, it's kind of weird, but both nights we ran into We Were What, aka Danielle Bernstein.
Gosh, yeah.
And I have to say, the girl gets a lot of hate. And I'm not co-signing her. I'm also not saying let's like burn her at the stake. I don't think like some of the fashion stuff was very kosher.
Mm-hmm.
But the second night at Surf Lodge, we ran into her in the bathroom and like ended up talking to her for a second. And she was really nice and very pretty in person. So I'm just throwing that out there. But anyways, Crow's Nest, she was there too. It looks like we were stalking her. I'm like, we absolutely had no idea she'd be at these same spots. I guess there are only like four places in Montauk, realistically. But yeah, it's just honestly like we were very shameless about it. We went for the pics for the Instagram.
Absolutely.
But it was the most beautiful sunset as someone who's just shitting on Manhattan Henge. Like this sunset made Manhattan Henge look like a fucking pussy.
Damn.
Like, this sunset really brought it. So yeah, that's my weekend. Oh, and I'm back on the apps.
Oh,
I meant to tell you that last week, but I'm back
exciting.
On the apps. Have I gone on any dates and do I remember to respond most of the time? No.
I don't remember
but
to
your
respond
bitch
either.
Is back on the apps.
Hell yeah.
Okay, with that, guys, happy listening. And remember, rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, follow
us. Do all the things.
Yeah.
Also, read like all of Ginny's tweets before
this.
Yes. It'll get you hype.
Yeah, if
so good.
If you're someone who has to like multitask and you don't have like a task to do while listening to this, just like peruse her Twitter, a good giggle, like a real good giggle,
an out loud giggle by yourself. That's how good.
Goal, giggle out loud.
Oh Lord.
Okay, and with that, enjoy your episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. Today, we have the honor of having Ginny Hogan on, who is a comedian, humorist, published author, and Twitter legend. She writes for publications like The New Yorker, The Atlantic, Cosmo, and The New York Times. She has an Audible original called Yes, We Mustard, a book called Toxic Femininity in the Workplace, and a second book that will probably be out by the time this episode is out in May that's called I'm More Dateable Than a Plate of Refried Beans. Hey, Ginny, what the fuck's up? How are you? Thank you for coming on.
I'm so happy to be here. I am at the beginning of a cold, as you can probably hear.
I love it. It's so sexy. Good. I mean, I feel like that's my normal voice is like raspy. Like
I tell you now.
Right. You have a sexy voice.
My issue is sometimes I end up like 5 octaves below sexy. And so it's sort of like not great.
It's a vibe. It's good. It's good. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I know that you have some stuff going on for your book that's coming out. Just to start out, do you want to tell us a little bit about I'm More Dateable Than a Plate of Refried Beans? Also, why refried beans? Like, I feel like this is a constant for you, and I really, like, I want to get into it.
Yeah, someone was like, why are all of your books named after foods? Which only 2 of them are. And the Audible one is not, arguably not even a book. So it's a riff on the title of one of the pieces in the book. So the book is a collection of humor pieces, kind of like the satire that you'd read in The New Yorker. And in between, it's like personal essays about my own experiences dating. So it's supposed to be kind of like taking on the structure of a modern relationship, but it's entirely satirical and it's not like one narrative or one set of characters. Yeah, one of the essays is called like How to Prove Once and for All That You're Hotter Than a Plate of Refried Beans. And that's actually an essay I wrote like years and years ago for McSweeney's. We spent a really long time picking a title for the book. And we had settled on one that was called like Dating is Ruining My Love Life, which I thought was really good and I liked it a lot. And then we had to switch it because there was like a self-help book, that title, that was like very earnest about how dating is like bad for people's love life. Yeah.
That's so sad.
I know. I was really annoyed.
That was really earnest.
Yeah. I was like, well, how come these self-help writers were like accidentally funny? But it happens, I guess. It does happen. So that's how we settled on it. And the title is long, but I think the illustration on the cover does a really good job of still making it look like easy to read, which is good.
Yeah, no, it looks awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. And for people listening, Ginny's such a funny writer, and I feel like you're best known definitely for your tweets. If you haven't, like, look her up right now, Ginny Hogan. And once you see the little icon, like, I don't know if you're ever going to be able to stray from that icon, because I feel like it's like literally, yeah, with Nina, she was like,
sure. Was like, oh, I know that tank.
You're
top.
Like, the second I saw it, I knew it was her. But yeah, so before getting into Twitter, you were doing stuff in the tech world, which kind of inspired your first book, which is about toxic femininity in the workplace. Do you want to talk about like what that was like and how you transitioned into comedy and all of that stuff?
Totally, yeah. So I was a math major in college, and then basically like a lot of the math majors I knew either went into finance or they went into the tech industry, and I thought that the tech industry seemed like it had better hours, which it definitely does. So I went to go be a data scientist, which is like the jobs that I had in data science were basically like glorified consultants. Like I was like in Excel all day. And I worked at one company that like my boss left, and it was just startups can be so disorganized that like Like, people talk about how overworked everyone at startups is, but they don't talk about the bright side, which is that sometimes it's so disorganized that you can, like, get away with doing nothing. So I had, like, a month where, like, no one noticed that I didn't have any work to do, which was great. And I, like, took a stand-up comedy class and started, like, writing stand-up, like, during the day at work. So before then, the reason I took a stand-up comedy class is that I had this, like, data blog where I analyzed my online dates from, like, a data perspective. But it kind of just turned into, like, a satirical blog. And, like, I thought it was funny. And one of them, like, went viral. And, like, some, like, random guy who I, like, later hooked up with was, like, you're funny. Like, you should stand up. And, like, I was really, like, shy and quiet. But, and it was, like, he was the first person who'd ever, like, I feel like a lot of stand-ups get into it because everyone is, like, you should do stand-up. But, like, no one ever told me I should do stand-up.
Until this one guy who changed your life.
He literally changed my life, yeah. Yeah. It was, like, totally random. I don't really know what he's up to now. He's probably married, I think. He, like, had a really serious girlfriend last time I heard of him. I was not a stand-up comedy fan. Not like that I hated it. I just didn't follow it at all. Like, I couldn't have told you who, like, the famous stand-up comedians were. But I got really into it. It was a lot of fun. So
that's awesome.
That's so funny. Really fun. I majored in physics in college and was in the startup world. And then I'm like, maybe this is, like, a weird pattern. But I got into comedy while I was working a, like, tech job. Because I was just sort of looking for something else to be doing, and then sort of fall into the same kind of thing. So who knows?
Yeah.
Not that physics majors are destined for comedy.
What did you do in tech?
So when I started stand-up, I was working at a 3D printing company, which was really, really cool. And then I had started a company in college, and we are, like, solution was a tech solution to help women feel safer on college campuses. So that's kind of what I was doing for a while.
Cool.
Yeah.
So when this was all happening, like when the stand up, like when you started getting into stand up and, you know, kind of like left the tech world to get into writing and stuff, like, is that when your Twitter first started blowing up? Like, were they coinciding in time, or was it just like one then the other? Like, how, when did that come about? Like, when did you know you'd made it on Twitter?
I still don't feel like I made it on Twitter. That's very nice of you to
say. Made it on Twitter.
I lost 500 Twitter followers yesterday, but I think it was just people deleting their accounts because of Elon Musk.
That was bound to come up also.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Did you guys lose 500? Everyone lost followers, right?
I mean, I didn't have a lot to lose.
Yeah, I didn't check because, it's just, it's so abysmal already. Like,
my Twitter following, I should work on that as a comedian. I should really put more effort into that. But
people only like my tweets once I convert them to Instagram. They don't have a lot of life on Twitter.
Listen, sometimes it goes both ways, honestly.
But did you have
an initial tweet that, like, took off? Like, when did that happen? Like, when was the first tweet you had, or what was it, if you remember, that, like, really got some attention?
I'm pretty sure that my like fastest growth period of Twitter was I posted a stand-up clip that was like, it was like 2.5 minutes long, and the subtitles were so bad, and like, you cannot have subtitles that bad anymore because, like, the automatic subtitling technology has, like, improved. Like, this was, like, it wasn't that long ago, but it was like 2019, and it was like a 2.5 minute bit of, like, my, like, probably strongest stand-up jokes, and I had never posted stand-up before. And then, like, that went, like, not, like, extremely viral, but, like, more viral than my tweets. And a lot of my followers up until that point were like, oh, we didn't even know you did stand-up. So then I started posting a lot of stand-up clips, like, every other day. And I probably went from, like, 20,000 followers to, like, 50,000 followers in, like, 3 months or so, and that was probably my, like, fast growth time. But now, like, if I post a new stand-up clip, it gets, like, you know, like, 100 likes. Like, I think also, like, I just, like, recycle jokes so shamelessly. Like, my stand-up jokes are the same as my tweets. I'll, like, tweet the same thing, like, 8 months later. Like, I don't know. I just operate under – I can't even remember what stuff I've posted where. Like, my TikToks are just me saying my tweets. Like,
I feel like that's a ton of people, though. Yeah. Or people who steal tweets for their TikToks. That's happened to a lot of my friends who are, like, good at Twitter.
I get accused of stealing tweets on my TikTok, but they're my tweets.
You're like, you dumb bitch.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Wait, so, yeah, I was going to ask, too, like – Do you feel like you ever test material out on Twitter that then kind of goes into your stand-up routine or vice versa?
Yeah, definitely. Twitter, anything I think is remotely funny, I'll tweet. It just feels like so low, unless it's like offensive, it's low stakes, you know, because it's just like a matter of like typing it out. Whereas like stand-up, I don't do stand-up as often anymore. So I do kind of try to like be smart about what I'm practicing just because I'm not going to have all that much time to practice different things. So I would say if something does well on Twitter, I'll try it in my stand-up. But Twitter's like the first place I try things for
Definitely. Sure. That makes sense. Yeah. Also because like I feel like you tweet like frequently.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a power tweeter.
Tweet constantly. How do you feel about the whole Elon thing? Are you scared?
I'm like scared people will stop using Twitter. I definitely think it's bad to like let Trump back on. But I also like when people are like Twitter's, you know, now going to be a place for really violent hate speech. I'm like, you could find that stuff on Twitter now. I mean, like, I don't know. And I also feel like I did a pretty good job at like muting it before, and I'll learn how to mute it again. But I hope that people don't completely give up Twitter. Yeah. The edit button could be nice.
That's something he wants to do. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He's big into the edit button.
Makes sense.
That could solve a lot of crises. PR crises.
I feel like I just have weird typos sometimes. Also, I feel like a lot of viral tweets have weird typos sometimes. So I'll see something and I'm like, I mean, it's still hilarious. I know they didn't mean to type that word four times, but like,
that's true.
That'd be nice to edit out.
That's so funny. So you also have a show coming up that was paused because of the pandemic. What's the name of the show again? It's like,
I finished my 20s and all I got was a stupid sobriety.
I was going to butcher it somehow. But yeah, you're finally doing that. So congrats.
Yes. Thank you so much. I should probably learn to come up with shorter titles for my things. it's fun. I'm doing it in Atlanta and then I'm doing it in New York. It's a stand-up hour. I'm excited. I kind of like with stand-up need to just make my own stuff, I guess. Like, I just feel like I was waiting for so long. I've been doing stand-up for so long, and, like, I keep waiting for, like, oh, I'll get my late-night set, and that's, like, the platform I need, and I think I just need to, like, move forward with just producing everything myself. I kind of also, just in general, think I'm going to start, like, producing everything myself. I don't know. Everything else feels too volatile.
Yeah, it's just nicer when you have control over it. Yeah. I feel like, especially as a comedian or an actor or a podcaster with all of these things, because waiting for someone else, it just
feels never, like betting on luck a lot of times. Yeah,
exactly. So what is some of that content about, and like what was the journey, since I know like that's in a lot of your tweets and stand up, what was your journey getting sober like? Do you want to talk about that a little
bit? I quit drinking when I was like, I guess 27. And I had just moved to Los Angeles. I had been drinking like more and more the entire time I'd been doing stand-up, which started when I was 24. I just kind of was like, my life felt totally stagnant and the drinking was getting worse. So I like moved to Los Angeles and I kind of felt like I was moving. Like people say, like if you like the easiest way to like change a habit is to like actually change yourself, is like change your location. So I like just moved across the country and I'd wanted to move to Los Angeles anyway. It was a little bit weird because I like moved and didn't know anybody and was getting sober. So I spent my first like month in Los Angeles, like entirely in my apartment. I had a remote job, but I like the job was probably like 6 hours a day. And then I just was like reading a lot and like meditating. And I, you know, I had like a very like spiritual time. I don't know if you guys know about like the pink cloud of like early sobriety, but it's like where like everything feels like extremely hopeful because like, I don't know, like the world is just new again. So I definitely had like this weird like spiritual transformation. I'm over that now.
But I was going to say quickly that I didn't know about the pink cloud concept of sobriety, but I'm watching season 2, The Flight Attendant.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually talk about that because she like gives this like 1 year speech and she's talking about how like everything's so like rosy and she just moved to LA and it sounds like really similar to what you're saying.
Should I watch
she's, like
Flight
everything's
Attendant?
Amazing. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't know the second season was out.
Yeah, it just came out. But anyways, so Everything's Sunny, you're in LA. It's going well. Now, how are you feeling about it? So you're like 3 years in or so?
Yeah, I'm 3 years in. I feel good. It doesn't like, I went to AA the other night, and I don't go to AA all that often, but I went the other night, and like, so one of the things I really liked about sobriety in the beginning is that like, it's such a focused goal that you can just be like, well, as long as I'm not drinking, I don't need to worry about anything else. So like, I'll drink like energy drinks all the time and like eat a lot of sugar, especially like in my first like year or whatever. And I didn't really think about it. And like, I have recently, my body was like physically decrepit before I quit drinking. Like I could like barely get out of bed. I was like taking a lot of Adderall just cause like, otherwise I would sleep all day. And it got a lot better as soon as I quit, or yeah, like the kind of recovery from that, I just felt very good physically. And in the last like 3 or 4 months, I've been again starting to feel bad physically, not to the same extent, but like really bad acid reflux, like very low energy, like mood swings. And I just drink so much coffee and like so many energy drinks. And I went to AA, and one woman talked entirely about caffeine, like, which is like one of the cool things about AA that like, okay, so AA has a kind of bad rap. And I think that a lot of it comes from like what the official AA like platform is, or like what their official stance is on things. But yeah, if you actually go to a meeting, it's like pretty progressive. And like, I don't think they're obsessed with labeling people alcoholics. I don't even really identify as an alcoholic. I've never like started my share by saying that I was an alcoholic, and no one's ever like corrected me. Yeah. So you don't have to talk about drinking. So like this one woman said that she quit drinking, and then 3 years after that, she quit caffeine, and she felt like quitting caffeine had been a lot harder. And like, it felt, I kind of like at that moment was like, oh, I do think I need to quit caffeine, and it's probably going to be a like slow process. But like, it's so easy to be like, oh, what is the thing that's like drinking was like completely fucking up my life. And I was like sending crazy drunk texts and emails all the time. And like, obviously caffeine doesn't have that effect. It's not like psychoactive, but I am like, yeah, oh, it is definitely making my life worse. It's probably why I feel bad all the time. Why, like my stomach always hurts, and my mood is like, you know, it's like, I'll be sad and then I'll drink coffee and I'll be hyper and then I'll crash. Like, so that's kind of where I'm at. And it's annoying because like, I've definitely had this thought over the past few years, but I've been like, oh, I don't have to stop drinking coffee, because I'm still in like early sobriety. And now that I'm like 3 years in, I'm like, I probably do have to start looking at like the rest of my life, which is kind of annoying. I don't know. Are you guys drinking coffee?
Yeah, you're like, I took out this one big thing. Like, yeah, literally. Yeah, I get it too. I think there's also like,
there's something about, I guess in any place, but there's something about like, especially like in New York or like a big city, I feel like it breaks up your day, like going to like get the coffee or like just having something. It's almost like a reflex.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if I pass by like a nice coffee place, I'm like, oh, I should just get one to like have it in my hand to like feel like I'm like breaking up the day somehow.
Just like something to do.
Yeah.
That's like why, I mean, I drink matcha because I'm basic bitch.
Yeah, but she doesn't drink caffeine. Like,
I'm like, I'll drink it occasionally, but I never need it. And like, I never needed it in college. And I felt like that I was studying all the time. So I'm like, if I didn't need it then, I might as well not need it now. But now with comedy, like I just have days where I'm like so tired after midnight shows or something. I'm slowly inching towards it. But I'm like, I guess it could be worse. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think it tastes good. I just...
I definitely need it, but I feel like I've almost like developed such a high tolerance for it that it doesn't even affect me anymore, which is actually super alarming. Like, I feel like I'll have like 3 and I'm like, okay, I'm just about awake. But yeah, so I might be seeing a specialist about that because it's kind of alarming to like never feel awake.
This is actually Caitlin's cry for
so that. Yeah, this is actually my personal addiction is to being in bed and sleeping. It's really good.
Yeah.
I can't even blame it on seasonal depression anymore, so we're really going to have to like get to the bottom of it.
That
ship has sailed. What?
Do you mind if I ask how much you sleep?
I sleep, I mean, I guess I sleep a normal amount. It's more like if I have nothing to do for an hour, I could fall asleep and take a nap. Like I'm always like,
I'm
never feeling like super awake.
Yeah, yeah. No, my like preference is always to close my eyes. I'm like learning.
If given the choice.
Yeah.
You're learning how to what?
I'm learning how to drive right now. I grew up in New York City and I don't know.
I'm like, classic. Yeah, guys, Ginny's also from New York. Yeah. Amazing.
I had a driving lesson this morning and I like am so sleepy all the time. And I'm convincing myself, I'm like, well, I'm going to have so much adrenaline driving. I'm not going to be sleepy. I'm going to be terrified. But I like fully at every red light would like close my eyes. And it's like, I don't even know how to drive. And like, I'm pretty good at driving. Fine driving so in New York, scary. You know, like this is like very alarming. I should not be doing this.
Resting your eyes at a stoplight. That's definitely
so funny. Oh my God, guys, learning how to drive in New York is not it. This you should have learned when you're in LA. It's a little easier.
I know. I'm mostly learning in Long Island. My older sister lives there, but I can't go for a few weeks, so I like didn't want to fall too far behind, so I like took a lesson here. But learning to drive in New York is
I cannot imagine. I learned to drive in bumfuck North Carolina.
Yeah, so that's probably the ideal place to learn.
It would have been hard for me to crash.
Yeah, I mean, LA is hard to drive in certain ways. Like, people will be crazy on the freeways. But, like, New York City, it's just, like, you have the people, you have the bikes. It's fucking lawless. Like, it's not the place to learn. For sure.
Oh, my instructor was, firstly, so annoying. Like, he kept, like, making jokes. And I was like, please don't. Like, that annoys me anyway. And also, I'm, like, really trying to concentrate here. He kept being like, oh, you got to check for the bicyclists. I had a really bad experience with, like, not doing that. And, like, he kept referencing it. And I was like, did you kill a bicyclist? Like,
you're so like, what are you trying to tell me?
So dark.
Yeah. I had a really bad experience with that. You're like, do I want to ask what the experience
was? Like, it's like, clearly he needs to get something off his chest.
Sir, please see a therapist. I am not your therapist. Literally. Oh my God, that's so alarming.
But circling back, one more thing I want to know about the sobriety stuff is, like, did you feel like there was a learning curve at all? Since, like, I know that dating something, you know, that you like love talking about and stuff like that. Did you feel like there was like a learning curve with going on dates and being sober? Because I feel like that's like something that a lot of my like newly sober friends are worried about.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I went on like a few dates in my first couple months and then I gave up for a while. Now I would say it makes dating much better, but like the reasons it makes it better, I think, are the things that people fear, which is that like it can be really awkward, but then you know right away if you don't have chemistry. So like,
that's so true.
If a date is bad and the guy is boring, I will leave after like less than an hour. And whereas I used to just like get drunk and sleep with someone, or like sometimes just like sleep with them to like avoid talking to them, like, or like get drunk to like avoid talking to them, like. But it does mean though that like a lot of my dates are just like kind of awkward and there's no chemistry, and I'll just go. But like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about alcohol is like, or about like sobriety is like, you do have to process all of what is actually happening, but then the result is that after, and that's bad, but after enough time you force yourself to make what's happening better, basically. Like, you just like stop doing things that are horrible to do because they become even harder to do. So like, I'm now pickier about who I'll go out with. I like, honestly, like most of my first dates I'd rather do on FaceTime, just because like if we're gonna have nothing to talk about, I'd rather learn it before I like leave my house.
Honestly, smart. Like, something that should be carried over from the pandemic.
And like, some guys don't want to do it, and I'm like, if you're not willing to accommodate like the very first thing I ask you for, then this isn't worth it, you know?
That's so true.
Wait, also, do you have a boyfriend now?
I'm seeing someone now. I don't know how serious it is.
Okay, your Twitter is very confusing. I'm like, is she single? Is she in a relationship?
Yeah, I would not categorize myself as single in that, like, if someone asked me out, I would be like, I'm dating someone. No. Like, I'm, like, enough in it that I'm not going to date anyone else until we break up. But I don't think that it has that much, like, future potential. I wonder if he'll listen to this podcast. I don't think he will.
I was like, hey, guy.
I really put you on the spot there. I'm so sorry.
No, I mean, it's a fair question. I, like, yeah, when people ask if I'm dating someone, I say that I am, because we're, like, dating exclusively, and there are times when I'm like, maybe this is the real thing, but I don't know, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Guys, you heard it here first.
Heard it here first. Her words were, it doesn't have much future potential.
Yeah. I will, like, call him my boyfriend on Twitter, but he doesn't, okay, this is so embarrassing. He doesn't even follow me on Twitter. He like has a Twitter. Like, isn't that so rude?
Oh my god!
I follow him. Do you think he like?
Have you ever said anything?
Do you think he's scared you won't follow him back?
I follow him.
Oh no!
I've asked him.
Maybe he just doesn't use it.
He thinks it's funny that it annoys me that he doesn't. And I'm like,
oh, so he intentionally is doing it.
I'm sure he still reads like everyone. Like,
yeah. I mean, if not, someone else is going to retweet it and he's going to see it.
Yes.
You should block him on Twitter. Can you do that on Twitter? I'm sure, right?
Yeah, you can block people.
Yeah.
Be like, well, take that. Then he really can't follow her.
Well, he's already not. Yeah, I've got really some toxic habits in my mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
He follows his like ex-girlfriend, which really annoys me because I obviously look at their Twitter and then can see that he follows her, and just the whole thing makes me mad. I'm like, you're following your ex, but not me, whatever.
That's such a classic guy thing to do, though, to like do something that's intentionally annoying and be like,
yes.
I guess they're like it's their way of knowing you care. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's
something like that.
Yeah, I don't like it either. But
I know.
I feel like a lot of guys I date do shit like that and they think it's really funny.
Maybe I should send him this podcast so that he knows that he's being like a generically bad man.
Give him the timestamp. Be like, you should listen to this really quick segment right here in this podcast. It's really,
you're like, really nice. Really opened my eyes. Starting at 25 minutes.
Actually, so my last serious relationship got like DTR'd via me being on a podcast, basically. Like, and he did follow all my social media. But I was on a podcast and the host asked if I had a boyfriend, and I was like, I don't know. I've been on like 9 or 10 dates with this guy. I think we're dating regularly. And she was like, 9 or 10 dates? That's like a boyfriend. And then he listened to it. And then he was like, oh, I've been telling everyone you're my girlfriend. And I was like, okay.
Oh my gosh. Well, so,
well, that's, you know,
maybe that'll happen.
Sweet. Yeah.
He was definitely nicer. Yeah.
the current guy seems like a gem. Yeah. This is killing me.
Current guy, step it up.
Yeah.
DTR.
The current guy, it's like, I can't even really tell my friends about it anymore because they're just like, why are you dating him? I think that it's like one of those things where like, I need to date. Like, I broke up with him because he was kind of a tool. And dated someone else, and then I got back together with him, and then like, I think it's like I'm attracted to him enough that I need to keep dating him until I like get over him, basically. Like, I don't think it's gonna work for me to like superficially cut the relationship off because I already tried that, you know.
I'm dying.
I honestly hope he listens to this right now.
Yeah,
sir. If you're listening,
we can wake up call.
Yeah, just do better.
Yeah,
literally like. I truly am like, it like is good because I do feel like I've been working on my like self-esteem in the last few years since I got sober, and this relationship is like proving that I have some, because like he'll do things and I'm like, I'm just like a lot better than this, so like what are you doing, you know? But like I feel like previously I would have like internalized it, like, but I'm just like, I can't like help that you're like an idiot who doesn't see what's right in front of him. Like, I don't know.
Go, girl. Yeah.
I like it, you know?
And now you're going to allow him to listen to this podcast.
Yeah, so you're going to be like, really precisely these minutes, you know, just for happy Tuesday or whatever.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm glad that you're at least, you know, you're drawing the boundaries, putting the self-respect in place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, it's hard out there. It really is.
I mean, I think it's like possible that I broke up with him this morning, which is probably why I'm feeling comfortable sharing all this. But like, I definitely
it's
like.
It's possible that you broke up.
But, on your birthday?
Yeah. Guys, wait, we haven't mentioned on here. It's Jenny's birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I can't believe you're podcasting with us on your birthday.
Oh, it's so cool, honestly.
No, this is so fun. I'm so happy to be here. I'm having a pretty low-key birthday since, as you can hear, I'm sick. I mean, I took a driving lesson this morning. I uninvited the guy I'm dating from a wedding. because he was just being, like, so cagey about it, and I didn't want to wait for him to tell me he wasn't going to come, so I just preemptively uninvited him.
I respect that.
That's so real, the anxiety of it. It's like, I'll do it first.
No, it's like, you know what, fine. Like, please,
No, I'm like, if you can't express excitement that someone invited you to a wedding, just fucking don't go. Like, it's like,
it's you should be dancing and food. For wedding. Free food and
like free stuff. Like, exactly. Yeah. It's like,
Someone's paying so much money for you to be the plus one, and you don't want to just like get
also,
in on that.
Being a plus one is the best way to go to weddings. Like, you know,
I agree.
You have like no financial obligation.
Yeah.
Really no obligation to like schmooze with guests. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's no obligation on your really? End. There's
just
no.
Just having a good time.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, honestly, he doesn't deserve it if he's not going to get excited
Thank
about
you
it.
So
that's
much.
Really rude.
Thank you, Galen.
Sir, you're getting a little canceled in this. I'm so
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, he really is.
A little bit, yeah. He's on the way out.
Well, so this is going to be a really good transition into quarterly qualms.
Yeah.
Nina and I have been here for like a few hours, so we're really...
Our brains are
in a really special place right now. But okay, going into quarter life qualms, for people who are new here, welcome. Sorry for the chaos that is us right now. You're welcome for having Ginny on because she's fucking amazing. The technical theme of the podcast is being in your quarter life and figuring out what the fuck you're doing with your life. So quarter life qualms is talking specifically about being in your 20s. Okay. So first question, what is a pivotal experience that you went through in your 20s and how has it informed the person you are today?
Definitely getting sober, which I already talked about, was probably like my most pivotal experience. Yeah. I think that like starting stand-up comedy, because that really ended up like changing the course of my life. And I think it like changed how I viewed myself in the world because I was like this like shy math nerd and like really felt like I was gonna be successful via like doing something, doing like a conventional job at my computer. And like, to be fair, I do work on my computer all the time, but like I thought that there was only one way that I was gonna like exist in the world. Like I did not think that I would be able to really like put together a life outside like the bounds of conventional career expectations. And I had been on this like fast track to like corporate success my whole life, and everyone I knew was like on that track too. And stand-up really like opened up an entire new way of being, like even just the idea that you didn't need a full-time job and that like you could work less and have less, and like that a lot of people made that choice. I think that like created a big shift in my how I felt about myself and like my political views and like what I thought, like I think I was ready to make sacrifices to make more money that I definitely would not make anymore. That I'm like, oh, I think like my happiness is worth like saying no to this thing that pays me. And I don't think I used to feel that way. So I think like, I don't even think it's the act of doing stand-up as much as it is like the act of like leaving corporate America. And I worked in the tech industry. It was really not like that corporate, but like, I just like always, I like really thought the 40-hour work week was like going to be my whole life. And like now, to be fair, I work a lot of hours, sometimes more than 40 hours, but like, I don't see it. Like, I don't count the hours regularly. Mm-hmm. I don't like if I feel like taking an afternoon off, I take an afternoon off. And like, I, you know, and as a stand-up, I end up working nights a lot. So like, I wouldn't say I work any less, but I don't really think it like it ties to my value in the same way. So I think just kind of like, yeah, that transition sort of was like the most pivotal part of my 20s.
That's awesome. Yeah. Just doing something where even if it's the same amount of hours, the hours don't feel like you're just like counting them down. It's like working to live versus living to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing is like I'm like a freelancer, like I have an LLC and like I guess so. I'm like a small business owner, technically, like trying to introduce myself as such.
Which
now
is so fun for taxes.
Yeah, so fun. But like, if I only get paid based on what I actually produce. So if I am not in the mood to produce anything good and my brain is just not working, there's like no point in trying, you know? Whereas like when I had a 9-to-5, like I was still paid to just like sit at my desk no matter what. So now it's like when I'm not in a creative place, it's like of no benefit to me to try to be productive. I might as well just go have fun, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely a weird transition though. It took me a while to be like, oh, it's okay that I enjoy my technical job, you know, like thinking about like stand up as a job. Yeah. I was like, wait, but I'm having so much fun. It's not a job.
Yeah.
But
But that's kind of the dream. So yeah, that's awesome that you're able to do that. Because especially like
Jenny and I are from similar like New York City backgrounds, and you're really like set on this one path. And I feel like it is really scary to take the leap and do something like a little different. So, but I think that's really cool. That's informed so much of like the way you see the world now. And I have an LLC too. And it's kind of cool. Like, I feel like it's hard to give yourself credit about, but yeah, we're small business owners. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So next question we have is, what's something you learned in your 20s that surprised you?
I think I learned that like I'm not happier in relationships. I think like I'm not less happy either, but like I always assumed that I would, that like being in a relationship was like a goal and that I should be like striving for it. And I think like I dated a lot of different type, like before, probably up until age like 24, probably when until I started doing stand-up, all the guys I dated were like the same kind of guy. And therefore being in a relationship with them was like the same kind of experience. And then ages like 24 to like 30, all of my boyfriends feel very different from each other. And therefore I now have enough data to conclude that just the state of like the state of being in a relationship, regardless of who it's with, like doesn't really make me happier. Like I had, even like when the relationship, like it's really easy to be like that relationship was going badly, therefore I was unhappy. But then I had relationships that were going well almost until the end when it kind of just fizzled, that, like in an amicable way. And those, I don't think my happiness was any like better or worse than it is when I'm single. And I think like I'm now trying to, I'm doing this new exercise where like I'm trying to just be more deliberate about how I spend my time. So like at the end of the day, I identify what it is that I did not regret doing and like figure out the things that I like never regret doing. Like I pretty much never regret like going on a walk or like never regret like catching up with a friend. And like I never regret like going to bed early if I'm able to. So I think like now it's like, if I meet someone, I want to be in a relationship with them. I would want to date them, but I don't think that striving for a relationship for the sake of a relationship is like my key to happiness. So I think that's one of the big things I learned that I did not like expect, because I really like would have just thought that I should just keep dating until I like found a relationship that lasted, which in some ways I'm still doing. Like, you know, I am obviously still dating this person who's, and I wouldn't say the relationship was like super fulfilling, but like, I don't like, I'm not like afraid of breaking up with him because it means I'll like be single again, you know. I'm just like, I am still attracted to him, so I don't want to break up with him before then. But
No, I think that's honestly such a good like lesson for the listeners, and I love how you have like the data backing it. You're like, I really like, I've had different types of specimens. There's like a control group, there's you know, whatever.
That's a math brain. The same way my therapist is like, you've got to start putting things like in an Excel in your brain, and I was like, oh no, but it makes so much more sense.
I'm obviously exactly the same way, not at all. You can probably tell from the way I just tried to explain an experiment. It's been a minute. But yeah, I think it's awesome that you like have thought so much about it, and that there is this societal expectation that like this is something we're supposed to like check off the box. And I think like you do end up being so much more powerful and like self-assured and happier if you at least have that kind of realization, you know what I mean? Because it's not something you can necessarily control for, which I think is something we're kind of like mistaught growing up. Like there's this assumption, especially with like generations before us, that we're going to end up with someone. And it's like, there are some people who don't. And if you're fine with that, like you're better off in the long run, you know? So I think that's really cool that you're saying that, because I think it's something people are like weirdly afraid to cop to. Like there's something in, I don't know, in the world where it's like people are so hell bent on like ending up in a relationship, and sometimes it's not the key to success. It's just going to bed a little earlier.
Going to bed a little earlier helps a lot.
Yeah, it really does. It really, really does. And then I guess quickly, and then we'll do the game. What is something that you do for yourself when you're struggling or going through a difficult period to kind of recenter?
I try to like take walks without my phone. I get massages. That's one of my big like self-care, traditional self-care things. sometimes I can get my brain like fixated on something in kind of a weird way, and then I'll listen to like a million podcasts on the same subject. But that's sort of weird because it feels like a distraction more than like kind of processing life. Yeah, I would say the walks without my phone and massages are pretty good.
Yeah, I like both of those a lot.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
they're pretty good ones.
Okay, guys, we're going to finish off with a game of 7 T questions, which is 7 rapid fire random ass questions. Do you want to start off, Nina?
Yes. Okay, so number one, and most importantly, what is the current tea in your life? I know we've heard a little bit about the man.
Yeah, probably this guy that I I gave you all the tea.
That's so fair.
You've had plenty of tea.
Yeah, I think we've had more than enough tea. I'm so sorry.
Next question. Other than massages, what is your favorite guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure. I eat a lot of like Arctic Zero. Do you guys know that one? It's like the low calorie Halo.
Oh, yeah.
It's so gross. And like anytime I eat it, I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, also like I'll eat like 3 pints of it. It's 160 calories for a pint. And I'm like, this brought me no satisfaction and like a lot of diarrhea. And like, I would have been better off eating like 1 serving of regular ice cream. That would have like been more satisfying and healthier. Like,
yeah, it kept me full longer. Oh my God.
I was going to say, I was like, oh, I wonder if that stuff's good, but apparently not.
No, it's not good.
Well, it sounds like she likes it. It's not satisfying at all.
It like is. It's like if I need to, like, you know when you just want to be eating for a long time?
Yeah. Well, it's that's like, how I feel about like drinking not alcohol but just like having a beverage too.
Yeah, totally, like Diet Coke.
Yeah. For me it's like these prebiotic drinks. I'm so ridiculous.
Oh, I drink a lot of prebiotics and probiotics. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
same. I feel like you do. Okay, number 3, because we know you're a Swiftie, which Taylor era do you relate to the most?
Definitely 1989. I wish I were more into her newest stuff, but no, I'm more into 1989.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's like a happy one too.
Yeah. What's yours, Nina? I know Nina has.
Oh no. I have so many. I don't know. I feel like because I'm from the South, like I grew up in the South, I would throw it all the way back to her OG albums.
That makes sense.
But then I'm like, nobody really even realizes I'm from there. So
yeah, your accent is not, it's gone, not to find enough.
But I don't feel like I'm like a bad bitch like she is in her Reputation era. Like I feel like that internally, but I don't really think it comes through.
I'm dead.
I mean, Red's always been my favorite album. Oh, so I'll just say
great
that.
Album. It's, I mean, so I love good. The re-release. I can't wait for the re-release of 1989.
Oh, same.
What is something you wish you'd known when you started comedy?
What did I wish I'd known? There are so many specific things about the industry that I think I would have been a lot smarter about. They're kind of like technical, I guess. I'm trying to think of like a good overarching thing. I think just like people are going to know you from like the best thing you've done. So once you produce something that goes viral or that is a hit, like people will look into you. And everything you've done before, they'll like be able to see. So like if you put something out and no one sees it, don't worry. Because what really sucks when it happens to people is when they go viral and then they have nothing else for people to find and they miss their moment, you know? So like just like keep making stuff even if people aren't seeing it. And then once you have a hit, people will go through everything you have. Also, like then, you know, if you honestly think something's bad, like take it off the internet. But like I think it's like, yeah, to just remember that like when you get eyeballs on you, that's pretty valuable and you really want to capture that and like have good things to show people. Like I've had like satire pieces that have gone viral that have led to like industry related people asking for like samples of scripts. And sometimes in the beginning I didn't have like samples to give them, but like I definitely would have. I definitely had the time to do it. I just didn't think it was worth writing. Okay, well, I guess here's a better way of saying it. Like, write things even if you don't yet know who you'll send them to, because you want to be ready when the person asks for things. Like, so, like, I didn't write any scripts until someone asked me to, but at that point, like, it took me, like, 3 months to make it good, and that person had kind of, like, forgotten who I was at that, you know? So, like, just be ready with the content for when people in the industry come to like ask you for stuff is my advice. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually really, really smart advice. Smart. Yeah.
Love that. Yeah.
Nina, both of us will take notes.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, trust me, I'm taking a lot of notes.
I mean, I've never like sold anything in television or gotten really super far in any, I guess I've like had some interviews but for staffing, but I've never been staffed on anything. And like, but I do think that if I had earlier known that like to just have stuff ready, there were like a lot of connections I didn't jump on, which like those connections probably would have led nowhere because a lot of my existing connections have led nowhere, but maybe they wouldn't have, you know? So like,
yeah, you never know.
Okay. Next question. What is the smallest hill you're willing to die on?
Smallest hill I'm willing to die on. I think that people should be allowed to say that terrible men are hot. It like really annoys me when you're not. Like when people get mad at someone for saying like Ted Bundy was hot, it's like but if you can't say that terrible men are hot, then you're like equating like moral goodness with like attractiveness, you know, because you're suggesting
that's
that like
so true.
Only ugly people can be bad, which means that an ugly person has a higher chance of being bad. Okay, I don't know if you guys know Josh Hawley.
There's a whole moral breakdown to this. I love it.
Yeah, no, it really, okay, Josh Hawley is the senator from Missouri who I'm like pretty fixated on, and it's probably in some way sexual. He's like a really terrible... He's a very terrible man, very bad man. He was one of the guys who voted against the insurrection, upholding the election results on January 6th. He was like the guy who raised his fist.
That's bad.
And he most recently he held up the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings with like this totally baseless claim that she was like soft on like sex offenders, which she wasn't. It was so dumb. He's really obnoxious, but. He is, in my opinion, the hottest senator, which, like, it's not an extremely high bar, but yeah, I've, like, true. Several times called him hot on Twitter, and people always get mad at me, and I'm like, you can be bad and hot. Like, that's what really pisses me off. Like, you can be bad and hot, and I'll die on that hill.
That's an amazing.
I love that hill, honestly. Yeah. I have a joke about Ted Bundy and like talking about how hot he is, and it's so funny because some audiences love it and some are immediately like, "You vile human."
Yeah, I mean the two are not mutually exclusive. Oh my God, Lila just farted. I'm so sorry in advance.
It's gonna hit.
It's gonna hit. Oh my God, it's so bad. Okay,
yeah. Really to hit.
A perfect follow up question. Now that I just talked about. My dog's part. What is one of your biggest turn-ons?
Oh yeah, this very bad man. Josh Hawley, junior senator from Missouri. This is really psychotic, but so it's my birthday and last night my best friend is here from visiting from Baltimore and I'm like a little bit sick, so we didn't do anything last night. And she was like, what do you want to watch on TV? And like I literally made her watch like I'm upset. I get fixated on weird things. Right now I'm fixated on this one particular sect of like new Republicans who they're like, I can't really give you an overall name for them, but it's like this guy Blake Masters and then Josh Hawley and JD Vance and
I've noticed the JD Vance tweets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I'm just like very fixated. I'm fixated on kind of like their transformation because they all seem to sort of like turn at a certain point. So I made her watch like a million YouTube videos of like these guys between like 2016 and 2021 to try to like pinpoint the turning point. I have a script that's like loosely based on Josh Hawley and like I do want to eventually turn this fixation into content. Like it's not just like me like whatever like getting off on it, but like we watched this 26 minute video of Josh Hawley at like the National Conservative Conference discussing like how he thinks that American masculinity is under attack and like men today are soft because of porn and video games and like we need to like let men be men. And it's honestly great TV. Like you can go on Netflix and watch a bunch of bad shit, or you can watch this like 26 minute extremely compelling speech by Josh Hawley, who is like a sci-fi villain. Like he's such a compelling character.
So you're turned on by the sci-fi villainry?
I guess I was on a tangent. What is what turns me on? I wouldn't say I'm like sexual. That's more like an intellectual turn on.
Okay, I see. Perfect. So you're
intellectually turned on by how unintellectual or evil they're being.
Yeah.
In these speeches.
A sexual turn on? I have like very vanilla taste, but I got a new vibrator that's like pretty good. So yeah, I just use that.
Love it. Oh my God. Okay. I'm almost scared to ask this question because it might be Josh Hawley, but hopefully not. Who is someone who is currently inspiring you?
I'm really inspired by this woman, Holly Whitaker. She is a, she's wrote a book called Quit Like a Woman. She like writes a lot about sobriety. But what I'm inspired about right now is she has this new podcast, and she like got, I guess like kind of got kicked out of her company that she started, that's a sobriety related company. And like, she seems to be like completely lost in a conventional sense. And she has this podcast where she's talking from that place. And I am inspired by it because I don't think you get that journey a lot. Like, I think that people get lost, they find themselves, and then they tell you what happened. But I don't think you often hear about people being like, I'm a, and totally she's lost. Like a middle-aged woman who's like had a lot of success and now is in like an absolute lull. And she like lives alone in the woods, and like, she's like in the thick of it. And she, I don't know, I feel like it's like pretty cool to hear that. Glennon Doyle actually kind of did something similar where she talked about like relapsing on her eating disorder. And it was like a week after she'd relapsed that she was talking about it. And like, while she was in a relapse, and like, eating disorders in particular, I don't think you hear a lot of people talk about them while they're like in them, you know?
That's so true, because they're scared to admit it to other
people. Yeah. Like, a lot of people tell you that they used to have eating disorders, but I thought, I was really inspired by Glennon Doyle saying that she like currently has an eating disorder and is like currently working on it. And not being, I mean, it is dramatic and big, but also like, it's not like she continues releasing her podcast every week talking about other things. Like, she has not halted her whole life because of it. Like, it's just like a thing she's working on. And I found that like inspiring.
Yeah.
I really like that answer because it's so true. And yeah, there is this kind of way we're supposed to like narrate things. Yeah. Like,
right.
Yeah. I'm working on doing this, or I've started doing this, or like, I've completed this and this is what I learned. And we're so used to that setup. But like, what about when you're in the thick of it? And like, I feel like that's just like coming from a place of vulnerability, which only like draws you closer.
I feel like you could reach more people too when you're like in that, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'll have to think about that for some content.
I mean, you obviously, like, also this podcast is about like talking about like being in the middle of things and like being lost. I think for some reason it's like these two women are in their mid-40s. Like, that's what I think is cool, is to like, and inspiring is because I'm like, what if I don't have it all figured out by the time I'm in my mid-40s? And now I'm like, I don't have to. Like, I don't know. That's what's cool. It's like, there's no like age limit. Like, you keep working on yourself your whole life, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like at once terrifying and really reassuring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I'll let you get to all your book press release stuff. Congratulations. Do you want to let everyone know where they can find you, follow you, buy your book, everything?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jenny Hogan _. And I'm on TikTok at Jenny Hogan, all one word. I don't have very many TikTok followers. Anyway, my book is... my book is called I'm More Dateable Than a Plate of Refried Beans. I link to it on all my social profiles, or you can Google it. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye, guys.